You're listening to an IOE podcast,
powered by UCL Minds.
Welcome to the ECF staff room. I'm Elaine Long.
And I am Mark Quinn.
We are programme leaders for the UCL Early Career Teacher Development Programme. Why are we in the staff room? We are here because this is where the best professional learning conversations always take place. This is where problems can be aired bluntly and where solutions can be explored.
Over the course of this series, we will hear the voices of different colleagues as they come into the ECF staff room. We will hear from early career teachers themselves and from the mentors and induction tutors who support them. We will talk about all things ECF, the challenges and the joys. So why don't you enjoy a coffee with us, perhaps even grab a biscuit and sit down to half an hour of ECF staff room chat. Welcome to the ECF staff room, Liam Anderson. We are a little bit embarrassed to be talking to you in the midst of your Easter holiday. It's just wrong. We shouldn't have been calling upon you at this time, but I hope you're resting. I hope you had a lie-in this morning and didn't get up at your normal alarm clock time. We are really, really grateful for the time you're going to give us this afternoon with our podcast. As ever, because we're inviting you into our staff room, we offer you a full range of coffee and biscuits. So what would you like?
So really good to join you in staff room today. So interestingly, yeah, I wouldn't have a hot drink. I don't like any hot drinks, actually. So no coffee for me today. But some chocolate biscuits would be perfect. Anything with chocolate, perfect for me.
So I thought you were going to say your body is a temple and you wouldn't let caffeine pass your lips, but then you go for the chocolate biscuits. So we can certainly supply some of those.
Brilliant. Yeah, definitely. I think chocolate biscuits are in order, maybe Easter shaped ones as well to celebrate the holiday. I think you definitely deserve those. We're really grateful for you being here. We know you bring a great deal of expertise to the staff room today based on your blogs that you posted on Twitter and your other posts on Twitter. And we know you're particularly passionate about curriculum, which we want to get to later. But could I start off by asking you to introduce yourself for our listeners and tell them a bit about what your average day is like?
Absolutely, yeah. So I'm a head of department for design technology at a fairly large comprehensive school in Berkshire. And I'm currently in my eighth year of teaching. I don't quite know where that time's gone. It's flown by. And I've actually been teaching at the same school since I graduated in 2015. So my average day, I teach across art and D&T. So I can be in the morning doing work with year seven in art using clay. The next minute I might then be in the food room doing something like a Victoria Sponge in year eight. And then by the afternoon, I might then be teaching A-level product design, looking at something like sustainability and design. So usually I'll kind of be flying around during the day between those different subjects, but all good fun.
So I'm taking that you must have really refined your talent at managing students in big physical spaces, which sounds like my worst nightmare, because all I could think about when you described those classrooms was all the things everywhere and the clay and tidying things up. But it sounds like a very exciting but full and busy day. So what brought you there then? What was it that got you into teaching and, you know, made you want to stand in rooms with children designing clay and other D&T activities?
Yeah, so interestingly, the school that I'm at now, I'm teaching at, was actually my secondary school when I was a child. So at that point, it wasn't the greatest school, and I was quite inspired to want to go into teaching and try and, do things in a really good way and, you know, give young people the best start in life. So that's kind of where my interest first came from. then as I kind of then went into GCSE and A level, my favourite subjects are always D&T. I quite liked those practical elements, and I was quite creative, so that was kind of my passion. I then decided that, yeah, I wanted to go on and be a design and technology teacher. Went off to uni at Nottingham Trent for 3 years and studied secondary design and technology. And then, yeah, 2015 returned back to my secondary school, which was really exciting. And it's quite unusual at the start. Lots of teachers there who taught me. So it's quite interesting to be working back alongside them. But yeah, really, really great school, really great community. So I was really excited to go back there and start my teaching career.
I'm sure they were pleased to have you. Did you ever have any trouble with calling your old teachers by their first name? Because I know people find that quite cringy when they go back.
Yeah, it's quite a strange experience. Yeah, and I've still actually, one of my colleagues at the moment, she taught me catering when I was doing GCSE. So yeah, going from her being my teacher and then suddenly my colleague and having that different relationship, quite strange, but no, we get on really, really well. So yeah, so it's good. Really good.
And were you a well-behaved people when you were at school?
Oh no, definitely not. Lots of stories, lots of interesting stories that certainly that colleague and lots of others could tell. No, I was certainly a naughty child, but reformed now.
So that's interesting. So your 14-year-old self, dare I say it, probably messing about a bit in your lessons, would be very surprised that you're returning to the same school as a teacher. It's interesting, isn't it? It's always the way. I think teachers are sometimes the naughtiest pupils, and then they end up being teachers. I mean, there's no research to support that.
I deny that. I deny that entirely.
Just anecdote. I, of course, was a exemplary pupil at school. Of course I was. One thing that I really picked up on, Liam, is that not only does your passion for helping young people drive what you do, but what really comes out of what you're saying is your passion for your subject and that driving what you do. I wondered if you could talk about one of your proudest moments as a teacher.
Yeah, so I've got a few, probably one of them. Yeah, each year at GCSE, we involve our students in the Design Ventura competition. So it's a national design competition run by the Design Museum. And essentially, students are tasked with designing a new product for the Design Museum shop. But what's really exciting is it gives students the opportunity to work on a real life brief, so kind of everything they've been learning in the classroom they can then put into a real life context, and it gives them opportunities to meet with designers, speak to them, pitch their ideas, so essentially what they would do in real world design practice. And twice we've then had a group of students who have been shortlisted. So in 2019 we had a group of students who came third place. There were over 16,000 students who entered that year nationally. And then in 2020, we then had a team who won the most market ready product awards, which was also a brilliant achievement. So for me, I think that's one of the biggest ones. So being able to, you know, see students really succeed on kind of a national level with their learning that they've picked up in lessons and then apply that and create these really interesting and creative products. And the first team I mentioned in 2019, we're looking at developing sustainable stationery. So they created this bamboo pencil case. And then in 2020, the team then developed this moisture tester for plant pots made from cork. And it had a smart material in it. So you put it into your plant pot. If it was white, then you know your plant needs watering. But if it detected moisture, it would then turn green. So it essentially changed color to let you know when to water plants. So really, really proud of students and being able to see them succeed, like I said, on a national level, for me is a really proud achievement, and you know, really showcase the brilliance of the subjects within our school and on a wider scale as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a brilliant achievement, and it really highlights for me that the potential of subjects like D&T to really inspire students. And I wonder if you notice how that real world applicability enhances their engagement and motivation, because that's something that subjects like D&T can really bring to students.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, there's often a big thing in schools that, you know, we teach the curriculum for them to pass exams or pass their GCSEs, but actually, you know, that those wider skills and that wider knowledge that actually if they, you know, want to go on into a career, certainly for D&T, there's lots of those transferable skills around problem solving, communication, being able to, you know, confidence to pitch and articulate their ideas. All of those things really come through from those wider experiences, beyond just what we're teaching them as part of an exam specification, are really enriching. And I think, you know, they can then see, you know, the real benefit and the real, like I said, applicability of what they're learning in everyday life. They can see how, you know, people who are practicing designers, for example, use what's being taught, rather than just being actually we're going to learn this, because you might get a question on this in an exam at the end of the course. So I think it's really important, those wider skills and knowledge that we're teaching, and like you said, those opportunities to see how they're actually used in practice, really, really important.
Liam, at the beginning, you were listing all your typical day, you know, you know, working with clay or baking a Victoria sponge. You lost me on Victoria sponge, by the way. can you just list for us the different disciplines that you're teaching at the moment this year?
Okay, yeah. So obviously, I mentioned around art. So within art, we'll do things around ceramics. More kind of fine arts, for example. Then moving into D&T, we've kind of got an approach in D&T where we teach across the subject. So yeah, we don't kind of have specialisms, we've kind of moved away from that, but typically in terms of materials, working with food, textiles, graphic design, woods, plastic. Broad range.
So you're doing resistant materials and graphics, and food and my God. So there's a question here that, I mean, you're not alone, of course. There's you know, fortunately there are some other technology teachers out there, although I do know it's a shortage subject for ITE. We get told, don't we, Elaine, by science teachers in our program in particular, that they get anxious because they might be a biologist, but they have to teach physics and they have to teach chemistry. And, you know, so some teachers, of course, go in teaching effectively many, many subjects. They're not just lucky like I was, and I got to teach history most of the time, or Elaine teaching English. What prepares you for that? I mean, you know, just be honest about this. I mean, how much were you prepared for that during your initial teacher education, or how much did you have to learn these things on the job? What prepares a teacher to be able to teach across so many different subjects?
Yeah, it is a real challenge, definitely. And actually, I was really lucky that the course I was on at Nottingham Trent, we were really encouraged and we were really supported with our time in university to really develop skills across all of those. But I think, yeah, what's really important is actually, you know, trainees or new teachers going into schools, that actually the department is supportive with sharing that expertise, and really collaborative in terms of not just subject knowledge, but, you know, delivery and planning of all of those different areas as well. Because it is a big challenge. And actually, a subject like design and technology, and I think probably the same like you were mentioning, Mark, with science, actually, there's such a broad range of subject knowledge. You're never going to be an expert on all of those different areas. It's a massive challenge. But I think what's been really important for us, and what's worked well for us, is that time where actually as a team we can come together, we can share expertise within, you know, our different specialisms, but that relies on time. And actually that's, you know, we all know in schools at the moment that's a big barrier, but that time to come together, share expertise, be collaborative as a team, and not actually be working in isolation, that's just really important. We've got that team approach.
Yeah, that has to be it. And, you know, we do know, I'm aware there are some teachers who are teaching maybe in smaller schools. You said you're teaching in a large comprehensive, so you're going to have a number of other colleagues that you can draw upon. Some are working in smaller places, and they might be the only physics teacher for the sake of argument. And so it is tough. And a program such as ours can try to help with that. But, you know, there are limits. We know that there are limits in terms of the subject specificity. We do rely upon mentors, offering some of that subject expertise and input. which of course is one of the jobs that you have in your school. I'm going to talk towards curriculum, because this is the thing that we dragged you onto the podcast during your Easter break, especially to talk about. And we do hear, don't we, that new teachers, whether they're trainee teachers or they're early career teachers, often feel there's a disconnect between how they were prepared to become teachers when they were at university or at their skit, when they were training around curriculum planning and lesson planning and sequencing of learning. And then they turn up in some schools and they've got a very centralized way of, you know, this is how you teach and this is what you teach. Of course, that's not the case in every school, but we do hear this from time to time. So you can reflect upon that in a second, and maybe also, you know, how you make use of the materials in our program, maybe particularly those module two materials, which were about curriculum and subject knowledge. How did you use those when you were working with your early career teacher?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, quite often, like you said, in schools, you will often, you know, go into a planned curriculum where you're expected to, you know, follow certain schemes, learn or certain sequences. And I've certainly experienced that before. I think that for us at the moment in our department, we've tried to have an approach in which obviously we have our kind of core concepts and our core knowledge and skills that are obviously that we want in our students to learn and be taught. But we're quite open in terms of particularly with our ECCs and our trainees about how they might adapt those sequences of learning or how they might deliver in their own way, as long as they've kind of got those core concepts, that core learning. So I think, like you said, it's important actually, even at that early stage as a trainee or an ECT, actually you've got that exposure to that thinking behind curriculum planning. Because actually, if suddenly, and I've experienced this before, you know, 4 or 5 years into your teaching, you're suddenly asked to plan a scheme of learning, but you've never done that before. You've only ever had one that's been provided for you. Well, where do you start? What's the thinking that goes behind that? What are all of those, components that you actually need to think about to really develop a coherent sequence? And thinking about progression. So it's a massive challenge. And actually, like I said, at our school, we're trying to really give trainees, early career teachers, opportunity to be involved in that planning, think about how they're developing their own sequences. And if I think about, as you mentioned, Mark, about the UCL material. So I think for us, particularly things around sequencing around like retrieval, for example, and consolidation, they've been two really key components that have come out from the module materials that we've worked a lot on with our ECTs, because actually we know in schools at the moment curriculum is a big focus anyway. They've been two really large components us for as a school, as in the departments, we've been focusing on. So having those conversations around, for example, retrieval and how you might work that into a scheme of learning. Where are those points where you want to do that? What are those knowledge and skills you want to revisit? How are you actually then going to do that? You know, retrieval in design and technology, for example, is probably very different to retrieval in English or science, for example, by the nature of the subject. So having that also subject specific conversation around those elements of curriculum planning is also really important, and how they might be done within D&T, for example. I think those materials from UCL have been really, really important for structuring those conversations. Quite often then, in terms of kind of my mental meetings that I'll have with ECTs, will then often have up curriculum documents, whether that's schema learning or our curriculum map. Quite often I ask ECTs to bring in some of their students' work, and we might look at sequences of work and then how we might adapt and look at, you know, if something's not worked, well, actually, what's the next part we need to do here to adapt that? So rather than being, you know, let's tick off, have you done all of these things in the scheme of learning that I've given you? Well, actually, let's look at the curriculum. What are those key things we want them to learn? Has it worked? If not, what are we going to adapt or change? And then feeding back into obviously what they're doing through the UCL materials that might be then digging deeper into retrieval, consolidation, sure, and how we might adapt and tweak that. So that's kind of our take on
that. That seems to be the quickest win, doesn't it? I mean, if because obviously we want mentors working with our ECTs to talk about the discipline that they're actually teaching, not just, you know, not just the skills, not just the sort of generic skills, but actually what am I teaching over the next few weeks. And if you can, as you say, you got your curriculum planning out or samples of work out, then automatically that discussion becomes specific to the phase you're teaching in, specific to the subject you're teaching or the discipline you're teaching within that rotation. And that's how, I mean, that's kind of a classic form of subject specific mentoring, isn't it? You know, you might be using the UCL materials as a kind of launch pad for those discussions or discipline around those discussions. But actually you're talking about real lessons and real work that's being done. Great. I'm really, really, really glad that is that typical? Is that what you do across most of the program, or would that, you know, obviously you were doing that within module two, but would that be typical across other parts of the program?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, pretty much every mentor session, there would usually be a book out or a document out. Like you said, right. It's really important. And actually, I think I'm quite conscious of that. That, like you said, we look at these pieces of learning from the UCL materials, but actually then, like you said, it's really important to bring that back to what actually we're doing within our subject. So yeah, quite typical, we'd have a piece of workout or scheme of learning that's really focused on D&T in our subjects and how we apply that to our subjects. Yeah.
Perfect. I really like the way as well, Liam, that you have the student learning out there in the form of their books, and that you're linking what the ECTs are doing to the impact, because we hear so often on the programme ECTs saying that the programme is a repeat of what they've done on their ITT year. But of course, a lot of that can be mistaken familiarity, the expertise. So you may have heard about practice retrieval, but in actual fact, practice retrieval is incredibly hard to get right. And it depends on the subject itself, and it depends on lots of things. Or, you may know about cognitive load theory, but how does this apply to our subject, and how do we know we're getting it right? So actually bringing it back to impact, I think, really raises the level of challenge around those discussions and really helps, I think, early career teachers to think about adaptive expertise and the extent to which they're applying those principles from research to their classrooms and having an impact. So that sounds like a really interesting way of approaching it.
Absolutely. I think just picking up on that, Elaine, I think, you know, for me, I've always been really, really passionate about professional development and had a real thirst for it. And I think, like I said, then actually, even as an experienced teacher, you know, those core things, those core aspects of pedagogy, there's always opportunities where we need to refine or develop, or, you know, and actually some of those are really complex. So actually, you know, I've heard again around, like you mentioned around that repetitiveness sometimes that people have said that between ICT and ECT, but actually I think, you know, some of those things are, like I said, really complex and actually will take years to really refine and develop. And I think certainly for me, what I've really enjoyed about the ECF framework is actually it's really brought out those rich discussions, and certainly with the UCL materials really has helped structure those deep conversations where you actually are reflecting with your ECT and really going into depth around developing those aspects of practice. I was just thinking about a few weeks ago, we were looking at we went into then talking about scaffolding, and I've got a whiteboard above my desk, and we kind of spent about 40 minutes picking apart this D&T lesson and about what does success look like, and then breaking that down as components, and then how we might scaffold those different aspects. So we went into this real depth of discussion around just this one aspect or one lesson, but how we might scaffold that, because actually, like you said, there's lots of complexity there, and there's always room for refining and developing practice. So I think it's really, really important.
Just while we're on the subject of your curriculum planning, Liam, do you want to give a shout out for your own blog right now, and is there any particular post that you would suggest that our listeners go and read?
I've written a few blog posts for the Designer Technology Teacher Education Group blog, a bit of a mouthful. So it's aimed at supporting mentors and those involved in teacher education, specifically for D&T, but actually I think there's lots of quite transferable stuff around there around effective mentoring. I'd written one of my first articles I wrote for the blog was around modelling and scaffolding through mentoring. So when you're working with trainees or ECTs, going back a bit to like what we were saying, talking about a moment ago, that actually the complexity of, for example, something like scaffolding, actually, you know, if I said to a trainee or an ECT as part of their feedback from a lesson, you need to develop your use of scaffolding. Well, actually, what does that mean? Or how do they actually go about doing that? And what's really important, I think, particularly when you're, you know, whether that's through mental meetings or more informal conversations, actually supporting them to think about how they actually put those aspects of pedagogy into practice. So, you know, how do they actually do scaffolding? Just telling them they need to develop that isn't going to support them. So explicitly, what are some strategies they might trial? You know, as an experienced teacher, me being able to explain what's my thinking behind scaffolding, how would I approach that, and really making that feedback explicit, I think is really, really important. So yeah, I kind of went off on a tangent there, Mark, but yeah, that's a kind of one blog I think would be particularly good and useful if you're new to mentoring, thinking about structuring those conversations and modelling and scaffolding.
Can people just Google you, Liam? How will they find you?
Say that again, sorry, Mark.
What's the best way for people to find you apart from your Twitter handle?
Could Google me, Google Liam Anderson, Design and Technology. Probably there'll be a few articles or things come up probably. I don't use LinkedIn or anything, so yeah, Twitter's probably the best way, and I'm always kind of tweeting various things, so yeah,
and that's at Liam T Anderson.
And
Anderson spelt the English way rather than the Icelandic way, perhaps, or whatever it might be. that's really, really good, and actually you kind of alluded to it earlier as well, and you know, when you're talking about kind of very practical classrooms that you're running, it is for those of us who, you know, are used to students sitting behind desks and behaving themselves, not always, but getting equipment out and moving things around the room, that was always, when I watched technology class lessons when I was in that role when I was at school, always thinking, how do they do that? But if you're a PE teacher, or if you're a science teacher, or if you're a drama teacher, if you're a music teacher, if you're an art teacher, in fact, probably the majority of our teachers out there are actually doing exactly that. And so modeling, how they model, how you actually demonstrate in front of a class is a big, big art, a big skill that you'd bring to it, and that you know, new teachers have to learn and acquire the confidence in, because I think there's a bit of a confidence thing there as well. So doing all of that while, you know, keeping everyone's attention, everyone's eyes on you, it's I think those of us who talk kind of more bookish subjects always look upon people like you with a bit of respect, to be honest, Liam, because I think you deserve it. Just on the you mentioned professional development a wee while ago as well, and you're clearly a person who's, you know, very serious about your own professional development. I noticed you're doing one of the NPQs, so you might say something a bit about that if you wish. But obviously, you know, the there is a mentor development program sitting behind the Early Career Framework program, so you're in the midst of doing that as well. Can just, you know, how useful has that been for you? Doing any of the mentor self-directed study or online learning community sessions? I know you're working in Berkshire with the Berkshire Teaching School Hub. How's that been?
Yeah, personally, I think really, really useful. If I think back, so I started mentoring actually back in, it was January 2018. So I started off mentoring a trainee teacher. But when I think back to that now, I kind of hadn't had any kind of training or any kind of support. I was just kind of thrown into that role. And kind of over time, it's then been through, networking with other mentors or other colleagues. But I think certainly for me, moving into then the new ECF program and certainly the training sessions has been for that, I think it's been really, really helpful for me as a mentor to really think about my approach. You know, the on-site mentoring approach that kind of feeds through the program has been really, really useful. And thinking about, particularly maybe between year one and year two, how that mentoring role might develop and change. And actually, it might be that, going back to what I was talking about earlier, in year one, there's much more perhaps scaffolding and modelling needed if you know, those conversations and that practice. Whereas, you know, as you move then into year two, it might be, not all the time, but it might then be that it's more of a facilitative role that actually you're allowing them to guide the conversation and what they're looking at, and then you supporting and guiding with that. So I think, you know, those different approaches to mentoring and that on-site approach has been really useful for me, just to also help me, you know, really reflect as a mentor. I think the other big thing that's been really useful in certain, in terms of UCL, in terms of the materials and the setup of the program, those mental meeting activities and those questions have been really useful as well. Because again, if I think back to when I first started mentoring, I was probably asking questions that perhaps weren't that useful at times. So I think, you know, having that structure from the program has been really useful for me to think, actually, how am I asking those right questions, or those probing questions, or those supportive directive questions that are really going to develop my ECT that I'm working with to really think about and refine their practice.
And that's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, you've been mentoring for a bit before you came to our program, and you've been teaching 8 years, so you're not new to the block. We know some of our mentors are much less experienced, because that's just the nature of the job in England. You know, lots of, it's a very young profession, and therefore greatness is thrust upon people at a tender age. And then another mentors are really experienced, like yourselves, who've been been mentoring for 5, 6, 7 years, some of them. So obviously those materials have to serve all of the different purposes. So it's really good to hear, actually, you think that they've helped you, you know, the actual mentoring materials themselves have helped you guide, you know, maybe discipline some of the discussions you've had. So I think before I pass over to you, Elaine, I have to give a shout out though to Janet Roberts, who leads on ECF in Berkshire, where Liam is. And of course, Janet was the main pen behind all of our mentor development materials. She really did a huge job for us back in 2019, 2018. So a shout out to Janet, if you're out there, Janet.
Liam, I've been talking to you for about 30 minutes now, and I've no idea how you fit it all in, particularly if you don't drink coffee. Maybe you have some other source of caffeine. I don't know. So it kind of links to my next question, because overwhelmingly, you know, some of the feedback from mentors on the Early Career Framework Programme nationally is there's not enough time for them to fulfil their role as mentors. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think, and you know, I understand that perspective. I think, you know, there is that, you know, if you think about the way that the program is now, you know, for example, there's that pre-reading, that preparation for both the mentor and the ECT. Then there's the time when you would then meet and you know, discuss that and reflect. And there would also obviously be times in between that when you're having those informal discussions or, you know, reflections as well. But I think, you know, for me, in my context, in my school, we've been really lucky that hour of mental time each week is being built into our timetable. So that's protected time that we've got, and we know that we've got that every week. There have been times during the year, you know, when things just happen, you know, it might be an event coming up, or there's been something that's gone on where we've had to maybe change that time. But, you know, I think whilst it, you know, does take time to prepare for those sessions and do those mental meetings, I think they're so valuable, because going back to what I was talking about earlier, you know, that time to have that real in-depth discussion and dialogue, I think is so important, particularly, you know, that theory to practice element in the mental materials, and thinking about how, like we said, also subject specific, you know, an ECT then does that in their practice, is really, really important to have that time to discuss and support and develop, because otherwise, how do we, you know, support that ECT to be the best possible teacher they can? And actually, it's really important that they can, you know, professionally develop in the best way possible and the fastest rate possible. So it is super, super important to have that time and those conversations. And I found that really valuable, even as a mentor, you know, each week for me to just spend that time for me to reflect on those different aspects of pedagogy, and also my own practice. Actually, you know, it makes me think about what I do as a teacher. And quite often I've gone into mentor meetings and I've talked about, given an example of something I've done where it hasn't worked, or how I've adapted or changed things. So even for me as a mentor, actually, I found it really valuable to reflect on my own practice and what I do in the classroom, and also keep my, you know, kind of keep myself in the know of, you know, current pedagogy and practice and evidence-informed teaching. So, yeah, I think it's super important. I understand the time thing, but I think it's super, super important that time is given to really develop. And like I said, it, you know, it's helpful for me as a mentor as well.
I guess also as a head of department wanting to grow capacity in your team, if you invest in creating a team that can plan collaboratively, have a solid understanding of the principles behind effective curriculum planning, can then work together as a team, that's going to pay dividends for you in the long run as a leader of your team, because it's going to be a team game rather than you as a leader. So in some ways you're spending time to get time, I guess.
Exactly like you said, it builds that capacity and that, you know, ability for then everyone to be involved in, like you said, those discussions, that curriculum planning, that work. Absolutely.
Yeah, it sounds like a really inspiring team to be a part of at the start of your career. I'm sure they really enjoy it. So what advice have you got to mentors then that are starting out on their journey with ECTs? How would you advise them to plan for mentor meetings?
I think, like I said, the biggest thing for me, I think, is really important in those mentor meetings is that it's really made subject specific. So like I mentioned earlier, quite often I'll go along, I might bring some of my students' work, or I might ask them to bring some, for example, because actually we don't want it to just be, I'm very conscious when we do this, we don't want it to just be a tick box thing that we've met for an hour each week, we've done the, you know, the session that's on UCL. Actually, I want it to be a really useful hour that actually the ECT can take away something they're going to think about, something they're going to do that week, or they're going to try in their practice. We'll then come back the next week, reflect on how that's gone. And it might be actually as well, you know, we haven't necessarily stuck religiously each week to all of the sessions. It might be that we spent a couple of weeks on one particular thing, or we might have changed. So that adaptability, I think, is really important for the needs of your ECT. But like I said, and like we touched on earlier, I think it's so, so important that it's made subject specific, that, you know, those conversations are had, so actually you're building that capacity for them to be more independent, to be involved in things like curriculum planning, but also, yeah, being flexible and adaptable to the needs of your ECT, because ultimately, you know, the whole purpose of it is to develop them. And actually, if it's just a tick boxing to say we've done it this week, a really generic session, what's the point? Actually, we want to be useful, having an impact on the ECT's development. So yeah.
And in terms of the sort of examples provided in the self-study, obviously they're not always going to relate to a secondary DT classroom. How do you approach those in terms of making those relevant and subject specific?
Yeah, I think that's really important. And yeah, we've quite often found, like you said, it won't tend to be D&T every week. So yeah, quite often we'll then maybe, like I said, it might be something guided by an experience the ECT's had or I've had in terms of student work or particular lesson. Quite often then we've looked at other wider reading, so like I mentioned about, so the blogs, for example, there might be other people who have written blogs that we might bring into those discussions. Also wider reading, so like the Learning to Teach book series, the D&T ones being really useful. So I suppose it's just bringing in that kind of wider reading, that those wider experiences that have kind of really helped inform those more subject specific reflections and discussions.
Really interesting, thank you. And lastly, because we don't want to take up all your holiday time talking to us, we give every guest a post-it note on which to write some advice on, and it's up to you what you write on your post-it note and where you want to stick your post-it note. So I'm going to hand you over your Easter themed post-it note, and I'd like you to tell me what you're going to write on it and where you'd like to stick it.
Okay, so I think I would write on it to remember the positives every day, and I think that would go in our staff room. And I think for me, I think very conscious about this at the moment. Obviously, the pressures of teaching, we know there's lots going on in schools at the moment, and actually, often we, you know, can be consumed by all of those things that are going on and those negatives, and we'll remember that bad lesson, all that, you know, that thing that mucks up our day. But actually the positives that there are every day, and there are often lots of those positives, we tend to forget about those. So yeah, really remembering those, and I think they're the things that then motivate us to keep going on and know that we're making a difference, are so, so important. So yeah, that would be it.
Thank you. I think people will really benefit from that, because it's very easy, isn't it, to be consumed by the difficulties and the challenges, which are many and plenty in teaching. But yes, staying focused on the positives is a really, really good place to end the podcast. Actually, I think I can hear a bell. Can you hear a bell?
I can. We might be in the midst of our Easter holidays, but we're in the staff room, so there is a bell. That's our customary cue, Liam, to draw the conversation to a close. We're really, really grateful for your insights and your passion. Actually, that's one of my favourite interviews we've done the whole three series so far, Elaine. That's really, really been brilliant. Thank you, Liam. We might even have you again sometime, because I have a feeling we could have asked you many more questions. But we won't. We won't for now. We'll just let you go back to all that planning that you'd be doing, and more blogging, I'm sure. Liam, thank you very much, and good luck with the rest of your ECF work and your MPQs and everything else.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Really,
Liam,
enjoyed it. Thank you.
Our thanks go to Liam Anderson, who is a mentor on year one and two of our programme, for sharing a chocolate biscuit with us in the ECF staff room. Liam is a design and technology and art teacher at Trinity School in Newbury, Berkshire, and he tweets at Liam T. Anderson.
Please do get in touch with us if you would like to talk about your ECF experience. We especially want to hear from a range of voices. And lastly, we hope you will join us next time for a biscuit and a chat with another colleague in the ECF staff room.
Thanks so much for downloading and listening to this IOE podcast.